is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 386. I'm Lisa Sheps. I am joined by my lovely co-host, Nick Squared, Nicole Shiro, and Nick Mayo. You're listening to us on KOOP Hornsby Austin 91.7 FM, streaming live, as always, at koop.org. Remember, if it's theater, and theater only, it's on Offstage and On the Air. Don't go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
Angry. Am I angry? You ask, am I angry? And I at a loss for words. After all we've done, every battle hard won, every hair gone gray.
It is Wednesday, November 9th, 2016, the day after Election Day. On the show today, we have Mr. Jason Williams and his new show, A Wolverine Walks Into a Bar. Later on, we're going to talk to the different stages folks in their production of Fahrenheit 451. And of course, we're going to have a lively discussion of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Washington, D.C., and Washington, A.C. We'll be right back.
Let's end with why. It's a question now.
Okay.
Lisa, does Washington AC stand for Washington Atlantic City?
No, it stands for Washington at Cumberbatch. Didn't know that, did you?
No.
So I just have to say this right. I just have to say this one little thing right at the very top of this, because no doubt I'm going to spout off some opinions right at the top of the show, but I need to say that the opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily the views of Co-op Radio, its board of directors, its directors, volunteers, or underwriters. It is solely our opinions sitting here in the studio. So just got to say that, because I have a feeling there might be some opinions.
Do you think?
What do you think? So before we get into that, I'm going to check in with Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
How are you guys doing?
Fragile.
We're here.
Fragile. Get it? It
Fragile.
Was a rough night for many of us last night.
Fragile, present, open.
And it's cold and rainy out. My toes can't get warm.
So
it doesn't make anything feel better.
Yeah, I hear you. The rain was somehow apropos last night as I was watching the television and stuff like that.
The telly.
Thank you, Kim Simpson, for another great show of International
yes,
Folk Bazaar.
He missed it, but we were all dancing as that last song played out.
we were
moving and grooving.
We were. Let's introduce the folks that are here with us. We have Mr. Norman Blumensaat. Hi, Norman.
Hi, Lisa.
You know what? I'm going to turn your microphone up. Try that again.
Hi, Lisa.
That's
hey,
better.
There he is.
Lily Wolf, welcome back.
Hi, Lisa. Pleasure to be here.
I feel like you were just here.
Yes, I was.
And Mr. Jason Williams.
What's left of him?
What's left of him. So I love this. We have all veterans on the show today. So
I know. You were very excited about that.
So that little piece of music that we played coming into this was a tune called Seriously.
With that beautiful, wonderful man.
Tell us who sang that song.
That Leslie Odom
Jr. Written by Sarah Bareilles.
He's moving up into that Hugh Jackman, J.J. Watt, they can do no wrong world. He's slowly climbing up that ladder.
I may be with you. I think he's climbing up pretty fast in my book.
Look at him go.
Well, yeah. This song was written by Sarah Bareilles, and this was by This American Life. Does anybody listen to This American Life other than me?
Sí, señorita.
Sometimes.
Yeah, I'm a pretty avid every week. So for the past couple of weeks, they've been reaching out to Broadway composers, and we had the Frozen people on. What are their names?
Lopez.
Lopez's. They did a song.
NPH.
And NPH sang it from the point of view of Paul Ryan. But this song written
Which when he came in today to do his, little speech, I thought he was going to bust out into that song, and then it didn't happen.
What little speech? Did he do a speech today?
Oh, everybody kept breaking in to have a speech, but he had one too. But I thought he was going to bust out into the song, and I was like, darn, Paul Ryan.
Yeah, something tells me he wouldn't do that. So the This American Life producers as them. And then this particular song called Seriously is Sarah Bareilles' take on what Obama thinks of the process of this election this year. And this was written, obviously, long before we know the results now that we have President-elect Trump. Listeners to this show know that that's not my favorite thing. And what I want to just make an agreement right here, right now, we can talk about it for a little second, but then we ignore it for the rest of the show. Does that work for you guys?
Totally fine. Yes.
Anybody want anything out?
I want to say that artists creating art in response to this is my most favorite thing. Jason Robert Brown this morning talks. He said he woke up and wrote a song. Mm-hmm. I know that someone in this room woke up and wrote something as well. I think that whether it's singing, writing, dancing, creating, that it's the best response we can do.
Right. Yeah.
I agree.
Absolutely agree. And also we have to do our part. I mean, we spoke as a people, so we do have to sort of accept, I believe we have to accept that choice that the majority of us made.
Yeah.
Right or wrong.
Actually, it wasn't the majority.
That's true. It was the electoral vote,
but it wasn't of the actual voting.
He needs to get
voting.
Out there and do the job
right.
that he was not elected
we need,
to do.
Well, that's actually something. Yeah, that's another subject entirely, is we need to get rid of the electoral college.
Something happened a couple of weeks ago when Michelle Obama asked the country, are we afraid to be that vulnerable in regards to things that Donald Trump said about women? And she asked the country, are we afraid to be that vulnerable? And I keep hearing that in my head over and over. And my answer is, I'm not. I'm not afraid to be that vulnerable, to let this really hurt. And I'm hurting and not afraid.
Well, and I'm the parent of a disabled child.
Right.
And that's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen, ever. And, you know, if you're a friend of mine and you voted for him, don't let me know.
I hear you.
Because it'll be, you know, so long, Mom, I'm off to drop the bomb. I have no use for you.
Yeah, it is, in my opinion, very unfortunate for anybody who is not a white male, heterosexual white male in this country.
Yes.
Or little Bridget next to him. You know, because
I had to figure out who you meant by little Bridget, but I got it. You know, no. But even her, little Bridget's got to accept the fact that she's a second-class citizen in that case.
Well, you know, again, I was quoting Oscar Wilde today, ignorance is like a delicate exotic fruit. You touch it and the bloom is gone. And I think that's where we are.
Well, we will go on. I love the thought of making art.
Yes.
I love the thought of working together to build a better world, however that happens within the administration or whatever. So we continue to work. All right, moving on. We did have a couple of openings. And one, Anna DeVere Smith did Notes from the Field.
Love her.
Anna DeVere Smith fan?
Huge.
Big time, huge. Huge. Yeah.
I like her, but it's under the, in the, through the lens of I was very mad at her.
Why?
When Zach had an open rehearsal with her that they charged people to go see. And it was literally a rehearsal where she walked through on script, and it sounds
like you might have been mad at Zach.
I am
her.
exactly. I wear that, and I own that. So I'm trying to let go of that.
I love her.
Certainly loved her in the television show that she was in.
Dr. Acolytis.
You and I were done doing her Dr. Acolytis. I was like, come on, that's some good stuff.
So, but she's been doing a series of one-woman shows that are talking about a lot of race issues and things like this. And it's a very good show today because we have a lot of pieces that are socially conscious, of which this is one of them.
She took a lot of time. I think I sent you a video a few weeks ago on her in the process of an interview of her talking about going into the schools and prisons and interviewing and really using it's kind of, to me, it reminded me of A Chorus Line because she's really using the actual text and words from other people.
But she's done that. This is her third in this series. And this particular one is around the school-to-prison pipeline, mm-hmm. which people have a hard time understanding that. especially in communities of color, there's a real school-to-prison pipeline. We criminalize our children for being delinquent. Or not delinquent. What is it when you don't
truant?
Go to school?
Truant. The truant officer. Don't you? I remember you. That threat. The truant officer is going to come and get you.
Well, but
I
that was that was different. That was a school. Right now, like in most of the inner city schools, truancy is dealt through the Justice Department, through the police. You go to juvenile court. It's not, you know, when we skipped school, we were brought in front of the assistant principal. We thought that was pretty bad. But
no, it goes on the record. It's
now.
It, yeah.
But not when we were.
No. Now it does. I mean, how are you supposed to?
No, it's not only does it go on the record, but they find themselves a life of they end up, you know, from school. They end. It's just a
bad
one-way
cycle.
Street, right? All the way to prison. And that's what she talks about here. And one of the I like how the this was written by Ben Brantley. And he says, he starts, the first sentence is, just listen, if you would, to how she listens. Hmm. And he goes on later to say, but Miss Smith speaking is implicitly Miss Smith listening. Which I love that line. What a, this is directed by Leonard Foglia, who I do not know, amazingly enough. And it's called, this is all part of the Pipeline Project. Ben Brantley calls her one of American theater's most dynamic and sophisticated oral historians.
Hey. I would agree with that, Ben awesome. Brantley. That's a too. That's a really great description.
I would too.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. He also goes on to say that she creates a dialogue out of monologues among souls who, in real life, might never have the occasion to speak to one another, which I think is really great,
yeah.
too.
Talk about creating, using adversity for that creation. Mm-hmm. She embodies what we were just talking about.
Yeah, I have to find that video again. It was really cool, and her talking about the process and her interviews in the different cities that she chose to go to. I think it's 19 or 20 people that she ends up playing different characters that she...
Somewhere.
But she interviewed even more. It was I find her fascinating.
Well, if on the link on our site, which links to the New York Times site, there's a video of her, and she's portraying John Lewis, and she goes in and out of these characters evidently quite seamlessly and wonderfully. I did have Ben Brantley being Ben Brantley. There are a couple of words. And by context, they're actually really easy to know what they are. But it's just you want to know, why does he have to use them? One of them is the word, and I'm not going to give it to you in context because it's too easy. See if anybody knows what it is. Mimetic. Mimetic, as in mimetic talent. Mm. Okay, now
it's something
it.
To do with
to mimic. To mimic.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. It's mimic.
It's like mime.
Why didn't he just say that?
She was having an inner Marcel Marceau moment.
Isn't that the adverb version of mimic?
Mimic is also a noun. I could have said. Anyway, well, maybe. Could be. And the other one is splenetic. Boldly, the scene shifts to projected news footage of the beating of Mr. Gray in Baltimore, and we hear a splenetic account of that event from Miss Smith.
So it's mimetic and splenetic.
Having
mimetic
spleen?
And splenetic. Yes,
like of the spleen?
Yes, from the spleen.
Okay, you laugh. That is exactly one of the definitions, but that's not what it's meant here. It's irritable. But of the spleen is one of the definitions.
Do you think he has like a little fishbowl of little words written on a card? And every review, he just pulls a few out and goes, I'll stick them in there. Here we go.
Pulls one out. I
no,
don't know.
Pulls a little word out.
The thesaurus.
Exactly. So the other two pieces in this series are Fires in the Mirror and Twilight, Los Angeles, 1992. Mm-hmm. One of the things he talks about is how this subject is just so difficult to listen to. You could very well come out feeling like there's no hope, that all is lost. But it's interesting. He says, her style will seem to be less confrontational and more conciliatory. She wants to leave us with a spark of hope here, and I'm grateful for that. So she leaves a spark of hope at the end, which I think is great.
You think he wrote something, he wants the hope. She wants you angry, but she wants you to leave with hope too, which I like that. I tell you, I like when I leave upset sometimes. Because it makes you have a conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Even though I'm angry at that moment going, I didn't want to leave mad. I'm later happy I left mad. Mm-hmm.
So you sent me this, and I admit I did not even look at the link, so I'm going to just leave it to you. This is Return to the Forbidden Planet. What's that all about?
I didn't send that to you.
You didn't?
I didn't either.
Oh, no. Maybe I did. Maybe I did it. And,
but are we returning there? Or is that where we're going on our next vacation?
I don't know what it was because I thought you did and I didn't click on the link. And so
would you like me to tell you right now?
No, it's quite all right. Okay. Or, I mean, if you come up with it later, that's great. But you did want to talk about a Moana, the new Disney animated feature.
Yes.
With a young girl, the little girl heroine or little hero. I don't like to use gendered names.
Okay. Well, the good person in the thing. But Lin-Manuel Miranda wrote all the music for it.
The great god Lin.
Which I was like, you know, I'm like, well, you know, we wanted to know what were you doing next. Not a bad little stepping stone to create a soundtrack.
If he keeps practicing, he's going to get something.
He might, right?
He needs to work a little longer. Yeah. He's a little rough around the edges. You know what? I really don't think he's going to make it.
No. They've released... Well, I don't know if they have in the last few days, like 2 or 3 days, but they've already released 2 songs and 2 videos. And I think you only watched one though, right? You didn't like that one.
Yeah,
I sent you.
I could live
but
without
But they
it.
Had another one. But I have thought seen, it was
the
endearing.
Trailer, the trailers for it are cute as hell.
They really
I just didn't like
do
that piece
fun.
Of music. That's all.
So, but I was like, way to go, Lin-Manuel Miranda with a whole soundtrack coming out for a movie.
I don't know anything about this. Who is this character, this new character? What is the setting?
Hawaii.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Fun.
She is.
She sails a boat. I know that.
Yeah, I don't know the whole story, but and I know they go back to actual roots of Hawaii and the stories, and there's a lot of folklore, I believe, in it too. But I don't know the whole thing. I know she's.
That's fabulous. You sold me already.
Are you a Disney-ophile, Lily?
Oh, not necessarily, but
the animation looks very bright and colorful and festive and. Embrace it, like I don't know.
And
eye
they've
candy.
Been very good about writing and featuring strong female characters.
Yes, here we go.
So that's good.
We'll see how they mixed it up this time when you put all those combinations together.
Speaking of strong female characters, in a little city called London,
London.
Where's that? A young actress named Glenda Jackson. Just
Miss
opened
Glenda.
In King Lear.
Wow.
Playing Lear.
At 80.
Pretty
at
cool, 80. Right?
Yeah. It looks...
She must have not had anything to do. I mean, can you imagine at 80 to think, I'll take on King Lear.
Yeah. Okay. I thought she was a British politician.
She was.
And she had given up acting entirely.
Until now.
Well, not entirely, clearly.
Until now.
Okay. But she did give up. She's been for the past 27 years, I think, she was an MP.
Labor MP. Yeah.
Member of Parliament. So you sound very well-versed in...
there you go.
Tell us stuff.
Yeah.
That's it?
That's good.
Did you read the review, or do you know anything about the show?
I read an article on it, and I saw photographs of her that were... God, she can turn her face into the most amazing mask. And it reminds me of when she first hit the scene, she was so hot. And doing the Queen Elizabeth series, the Elizabeth R. And it's, she's, there's so many actors that are afraid to not look attractive.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't care.
She does not care.
She'll bare those
and they're normally
teeth
good.
And expose those gums and rip your throat out. That's why we're in the business, girl.
So the last time she was at least on stage at the Old Vic was in 1984.
Wow, that's
Phaedra and the House of Bernarda Alba, which is not one of my favorites.
Oh, she was wonderful in Bernarda Alba.
Did you see her?
Yeah, there's a video of it.
Oh, there's a video of it.
Yeah, she and Joan Plowright.
Love Joan Plowright.
They're wonderful. And it was directed by a Spanish woman, and it's very Spanish, and boy, it's just like,
Cool. Well,
and very 30s. None of this turn of the century Bernarda Alba BS that people do. Very 30s, very much... Garcia Lorca is going to get killed the next day. So
awesome. Oh, speaking of times, this King Lear is set in modern day dress. That sounds great. Joan Plowright, I like to call Mrs. Laurence Olivier.
No! That's a good one.
I have Laurence Olivier's autograph that was...
How'd you get that?
Because I was working with Juliet Mills, who was having dinner with Larry... during Joan Plowright was in town doing, I forgot what it was. I saw it, didn't like it. But anyway, I got it.
Interesting. I know what the Return to Forbidden Planet is, and tell us. Can't believe I didn't think of what it was. It's the new sci-fi rock opera of Shakespeare's The Tempest.
Oh, right.
Oh yeah,
and it's like apparently out of this world.
Yeah. Is it? What's the? Is it?
It isn't new, isn't it? Isn't it a revival of something that's been done before?
I don't know. If
she's going to check on it.
Yeah, I'll ask. It has, because that's what I almost said that when you
it's
said
a, it. It's a. It. They took it off the movie, the 1956 movie that was loosely based on the play, and they went on to write this show, but I don't. Because it's standard music. It's golden oldies from the 50s and 60s that shrewdly amplifies the coming of age plot line.
Oh, that's right.
Involving Prospero's blossoming daughter. But they said it is really out of this world. Overflows with fun. It looks spatialicious in the little picture.
Lovely. Well, there you go. I knew there was a reason why it was there. And where is it playing?
I was just going to say out in California. Yeah,
Going back to Cali.
The Rubicon Ventura. Theater. Ends November 13th. So if you're in LA now
for the weekend,
you have the chance.
Also opened off-Broadway at the Pershing Square Signature Theater, Master Harold and the Boys, directed by the playwright himself, Athol Fugard, who I can't pronounce his name.
I used to go bowling with him.
Did you really?
He was in the Broadway show league.
I was in the Broadway show bowling. At the Port Authority.
At the Port Authority late at night.
Uh-huh. Well, I was doing it for a couple of years. The few years I did it, it had turned into something. There was really only a handful of us, and we had such a good time.
Oh.
We'd get there at 11 o'clock at night. Yeah. And you'd get finished around 3 o'clock in the morning, and leaving the Port Authority in the '80s.
Good day.
At 3 o'clock in the morning, special.
Oh yeah,
very very special.
Master Harold and the Boys was one of those plays that I went to with no knowledge of what is going on. I was in New York, and the Negro Ensemble Company had been doing a soldier's play, and it was on half price. And so the day that I went to buy the ticket, it wasn't on half price.
Of course.
And I bought a ticket for Master Harold and the Boys, and I think it was at the Lyceum, which is a small Broadway house, and I was dead center in the balcony. Talk about something that just blew you away. Yeah.
Aha moments at the theater when you were so set on seeing something and you see something else and then you end up leaving like with a moment.
Yes.
It was the same way this summer at the Shaw Festival. It was maybe the best thing they did.
Oh, they did it at the Shaw Festival?
Oh, yeah.
It's a wonderful piece. The only time really I've seen it on stage was at the Sam Bass Theater with Mark Puhey.
That was like four years ago?
It was like 14 years ago. Because
was it that long ago?
Yeah, because I was going to bring it to Play Theater Group right before we closed. So that was in 2003, 2004.
That's a long time.
Yeah, but it's just a wonderful, wonderful piece.
It's a wonderful
piece. And it's for those that don't know it, it's in apartheid South Africa, and it's the story of two workers in a restaurant and the young boy that they, and I'm using air quotes, are friends with, but is a white boy who's the son of the owner of the cafe who shows his not true stripes so much as the society's true stripes on how they treat people of color.
Well,
people of color.
Yeah, because the one man points out the fact that he has basically been the father to Master Harold, which he rejects totally.
Right, in a very hurtful way. It's it's so powerful.
I was going to say powerful.
Amazing monologue too about the perfect dance.
Mm. Oh yes,
that is as good as anything I've ever heard.
Yeah. Matt, so I love that he's directing the show. What an experience to be able to do this production again and have him. Not much of a bowler.
Not much of a bowler. Okay. Neither was I. So.
I'm going to say we're not going to revamp that here in Austin.
Oh, no. You know what? It is the Broadway Show Bowling League or a Artists Bowling League, so worthwhile.
Oh,
so we is softball. I was a killer Broadway softball player.
Knocked
it literally out of the park.
Yeah,
Greater Tuna ended up in a tie with Evita. They were way ahead of us, and it was the last night of bowling. and we struck out. Everybody's taking their shoes off, and we struck out, and we beat them by like 3 pins, and so we had to have a rubber game.
Yeah.
And we got them elevated. We broke out something that's illegal in Colorado.
Okay, got it.
Not illegal in Colorado. And we could work that way, and they couldn't. And we smoked them.
So to speak.
Literally.
They were singing Don't right Cry
there,
For
right
Me.
Right there in the Port Authority at 3 in the morning, just knocking it back. Right. Yeah, it was
hysterical.
Great.
Oh, that's
yeah,
good.
It was fun.
Well, so this shows, this plays through December 4th, so you can go there for your holiday trip, and it stars Leon Addison Brown, I'm not going to pronounce this right, Sar Ngoj, and Noah Robbins as the boy. Excellent review. Looks really, really good. Last thing I want to talk about, it's Finian's Rainbow, the Irish Repertory Theater. Are we a lover or are we a hater?
Oh, bored.
You know, boy, it's like Brigadoon.
So
don't
bored.
Save me, laddie. I don't care about the
love,
Heather on the Hill in that
I love
show.
And, Melissa Errico, but
yeah,
I'm
I know.
Bored.
Oh, no, no. That's one of the great scores of the American
The music
Musical
is
Theater.
Great. Doesn't mean the show is
no,
awesome.
No, no. Okay, so when it was revived by the Encores thing, and it had that super hot guy who played Woody, and that
There's
production looked like
Jackson?
A super
yeah,
hot
it was
guy.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes, yes, and it looked like it was really good, because one thing that was wonderful that they did is because the politician gets turned into an African American,
right.
So they cast two actors, so that when he came back on stage, he was African American. I don't know. I think you could make it work, but the score. Oh my
the
God!
The scores.
I would. If I was in New York, I'd probably buy 5 tickets to see it, because I love the score.
Right. And the subject, and by the way, the score was Yip Harburg did the lyrics, and the music is by Burton Lane. But it's got, the storyline is good, and it's, I think, or it's important.
It's
for
absolutely
that time period.
Yes.
And fraught if it's done the wrong way these days. I mean, it could be done in a really
in a really
way.
Just yeah, it could go south.
But this is Irish Repertory, and it's got a marvelous review in the Times. Mm-hmm. So
and they've done it. This is a revival. They've done it before. They did it. It's kind of like a concert version. Where
it
I
is.
Think
it's four pieces of
music. Yeah, I think they basically do the music and just sort of a talk through of the script. Yeah. So.
See, I would love that.
Yeah,
That's how I would. I would probably really love that.
Okay, we gotta rock and roll. So we'll talk about the Hamilton mixtape probably a little later, because we're going to hear a little bit of it at the very end of the show.
How very
Yay!
Rock and roll of you.
Yeah. But we will go back with just trying to check out and see how things are actually in Glockamora. We'll be right back.
How are things in Glockamora?
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
That's Nicole Shiro and Nick Mayo. I just
you
so
love
much.
When we do that. It's hilarious.
I do. It makes me. It gives me a good time. So we have been talking to Norman Blumenstein, Lily Wolf, and Jason Williams, and now we're going to just turn our attentions and focus directly on Mr. Williams himself.
Everyone, look.
Hello, Jason.
Jason.
You know what? I should probably turn your microphone on so we
there
can hear you.
Go.
Hey, you know what? Can I give you a real quick job first so we can
sure.
go off on a little tangent? I need you to pick a number between 2 and 53.
11.
Okay, let's see what that is.
Let me put my gun down. This is D.D. Snavely.
This is Patrick Page.
This is Jason Williams, and you're listening.
You're listening to Offstage and On
I'm
the Air.
You know you're listening to Offstage and On the Air.
On KOOP Hornsby, Austin.
91.7 FM, and it beats that out of Andy Williams.
That's completely, that's a ridiculous accent. That's not how I really
you
sound.
You could do it again.
Good choice.
Oh.
All right, I tricked you. I had already prearranged it. And I didn't realize that Norman was going to be on. Had I known that Norman was going to be on today,
you could have.
I have a Norman's
magic.
Got a great one, and the two of you would have done a great mashup.
Thank you for saving me.
I think you need to create that mashup anyway, because we can always still play.
I may. Yeah, we can just add
in
it.
In the future.
So I don't know much about your show, but I am really happy about the title, Wolverine Walks Into a Bar. Yeah, it reminds me of the horse that walks into a bar.
Yeah, well, there's always something that walks into a bar, you know?
Okay, well, tell us about the Wolverine.
Well, the Wolverine doesn't actually exist. It was just, you know, I lived in New Orleans for 14 years on Bourbon Street.
On the street itself?
On it, well, real close to it. You know, I had lovely furniture. Lovely furniture. I had great furniture. My take on bars, I just started writing these monologues, I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years ago, just for fun, because to me, bars are quite often like psychiatrist couches.
Oh, yes.
You know, and I don't think
you're the alone in that.
Have no problem if my shrink would sit down and have a drink with me, although I'm not drinking at the time. But, you know, I just don't, you know, have a problem with that. Mm-hmm. But people will reveal things and say things and expose themselves and reach out to you in ways in bars that they wouldn't anywhere else. And it seemed like Lauren Lane and I have been wanting to get together again since we did Vanya and Sonia. And so that was the
inspiration. She did a great job in that, by the way. I don't think I've talked to you since I saw you in that.
That was so much fun.
Yeah.
And such a, and you know, she's so good. She has all that training. She has all of that training. I just grab something and run with it. But she really does. So many people have had tons of training and they can't apply it.
Right.
And she can. She's analytical and then she's unbelievably analytical and then it comes out so fresh and so beautiful. I wrote a piece for her in this that is a woman who was based on someone I knew about, who was a flight attendant who was on a very bad flight and flipped out real bad.
Ooh.
And
The flight attendant.
She got on the intercom and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, put your head between your knees and prepare yourself to die because that's what's going to happen." And then she started running up and down the aisle screaming.
Oh my.
The plane landed safely, but they had to give her a shot standing up and send an ambulance for her. And so I wrote this piece for Laura that started with that premise. But what it was it's about fear, and that she was one of these people who had always been told, "Don't be afraid, don't be afraid." And she said, "Oh, when I finally let fear come into my life, it rearranged every molecule in my being." And she talks about the purity of fear and learning to connect with your fear. So she's become a wedding planner. And she says, I know all the stuff. I know the flower arrangements. I know where to put divorced couples. I know all of that. She said, but the most important plan in any wedding quite often is a well-designed plan on how to get out of it. And she just drills it home. And then I have another scene where I play. This is loosely based on a friend of mine from San Antonio who was a Caucasian, but his father forced him to go to a very Hispanic high school, Brackenridge.
Oh.
And it toughened him up. And I created this character who is in love with Spanish profanity.
Yes.
But he loves to curse in Spanish because he says, when you cuss in English, it sounds like what it is. Cuss, that's a lousy word. He said, in Espanol, it's poetry.
It's poetry.
And he loves cussing in Spanish. He loves tequila. And he's married to a Hispanic woman who wants to be white. So they have lots of trouble. And when he gets a few tequilas in him, he just starts going Hispanic. And when she's had a few tequilas, she wants to be called Mary instead of Maria. And there are real, real issues here. He said, 6 months after we get married, she tells me she's not going to put out unless we move north of the loop. That I had to call. But the piece is called Burning Music, and it's about there's a wonderful section that I love very much at the end about this man in the barrio in San Antonio who learned to play the piano at his grandmother's, and he said there were about 10 keys on this piano that didn't work, mostly white keys, I might add, and he learned to play without them, and even after his abuela had the piano fixed for a Christmas present, he still didn't play them that much. He was loyal to the ones he started with. They were like his vatos. He didn't want to hurt their feelings.
No, well, and you shan't, and you shouldn't. Now, you did this in San Antonio.
I did it. We were supposed to do it together, and Laura's mother was very ill, so I ended up doing
all
solo
three.
Pieces.
Right.
And then we took it to Galveston and added new pieces and worked her in and turned some of the solos into duets. And the last piece is really it's my favorite piece. Maybe that I've written, and it's about a very, very elderly gay man and a very, very elderly lesbian in a bar in San Antonio at Christmas time, talking about the gay revolution.
Mm.
And they talk about the time that when it was, you know, he said it was illegal in the state of Texas to dance with someone of the same sex.
Yeah.
So they would have someone on the roof with binoculars, usually a woman named Sheila, with binoculars. And if Sheila saw anything that looked like military police, she would flip this switch and red lights would start flashing on the dance floor and every guy would grab a lesbian and start dancing before the cops came in. So you knew if the lights were flashing, you
go grab a lesbian.
So men and women had to be in the bars at the same time.
It's like
so
musical chairs.
It's two old warriors who got through it and who survived it. And he said, you know, he says now, he says, we're just so in.
We're just so
trendy. I just live in fear that Madonna's going to come in any minute and try to adopt every last one of us.
So now this is you and Laura in this. You have, there are more cast members, are there not?
There were at one point, but not anymore.
Not anymore.
We toned that down.
Never mind.
But there's different directors for the vignettes.
For each piece.
There were, we started work. This thing was being put together very quickly, so no one could really direct the whole thing. And so I got different directors, some that were students of mine, some former students, professor at Texas Tech. But one of these students is going to be a major director, and she lives here now.
Can you share their names with us?
Her name is Kristen Rogers, and she is quite magnificent. She trained at Actors Studio,
and then
went on and got her doctorate at Tech, and is an incredible director. She'll be directing the Vibrator play at Southwestern later this year. She's an amazing director, and all the other directors kind of stood back and said, "Let her take it."
Was each of the three sections directed by different people, or did she? Okay, so
Each was directed by a different person.
Did she do your favorite? Did she do the third one?
Yeah, she did the third one, and then every time we added one, she did it. So it's, and there's an old gal you're gonna love. Crazy old.
I love crazy old gals because I'm one of them.
Yeah, yeah. She's trying to find a hospital where she can smoke. And she finds it in San Antonio.
You would.
Yes,
you would.
The Knicks. You can die at the Knicks Hospital in San Antonio with a cigarette in your hand.
That is important.
It's in the contract.
It's in the contract.
It's in the contract. And the nurse will have one with you.
You're at the State Theater.
I'm at the State Theater.
And is it only two performances?
No, two weekends.
Two weekends.
Four performances. Okay. Two on Saturday, matinee on Sunday, Friday night.
This would be a perfect thing to go see if, hey, you wanted to laugh.
It's about healing.
And heal a bit.
Not to bring it up, but I'm going to say this.
You can go ahead. That was going on. Rules are made to be broken. Go.
In 1972, when the first election I voted in, and there were those of us who just could not imagine that we couldn't beat Richard Nixon.
Right.
And we lost 49 states. And on that weekend, I was in a theater company in San
Antonio. 72 was a super landslide.
It was super landslide. But that weekend, the San Francisco Meme Troupe came into our theater, and we laughed again. Mm-hmm. We laughed again. We saw nothing but darkness, and we laughed again. And so that's what I'm saying to you out there. Come
and laugh.
We'll have you laugh again, and we'll have you think, and we'll love you.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. And where can folks go to get more information about the show?
Where can they go?
AustinTheater.org.
AustinTheater.org.
There you go. See, you know, I'm such a bad secretary.
Well, Jason, thanks so much for coming on the show again. You are welcome anytime.
I love being
part of the family.
We love having you.
I hope you'll stick around and join us backstage if you have time.
I will.
great. That was Jason Williams. His show, A Wolverine Walks Into a Bar, plays the 11th through the 20th of this month at the State Theater, which is a lovely theater, I might add. For more information, you may visit austintheater.org. And I just kept the bar theme.
This is a place the elite meet.
Have you ever been to Jimmy's Bar?
At Jimmy's Bar.
At Jimmy's Bar. That's from a show I'd never heard of called Grab Me a Gondola.
Well, let me tell you something. I wanted to grab one and go to Jimmy's Bar.
Thank you, Katharine Hepburn.
Coco.
Coco. Oh, Coco the musical.
So before we jump into the local stuff, the one thing that we did want to talk that Hamilton mixtape is dropping soon. You can get to... You can get two of the cuts on
yesterday
iTunes, whatnot. You're going to hear one a little later, which is My Shot, which is done by...
The Roots.
The Roots, thank you. And then the other one was... female singer.
Kelly Clarkson?
It is Kelly Clarkson.
It was. I think it is. I think it's Quiet Uptown.
Yeah. But other people are... Okay, so we talked about The Roots, Usher... Watsky, most of these people I've never heard of. Regina Spektor, somebody named Lin-Manuel Miranda, Alicia Keys, Ashante, Illmind, Jill Scott.
You forgot Jimmy Fallon sings one with The Roots.
Oh, you know what? There's a link, and so it's a different color. I didn't see it. So Jimmy Fallon and The Roots sings You'll Be Back.
Wiz Khalifa, John Legend, yeah. Chance the Rapper.
Everybody.
There's a lot of people on there.
So you'll check that out, and you'll listen to a little bit of The Roots at the end of the show today.
Who may I add, when I moved to Austin and got on the plane and my stuff was all in a moving truck coming from New York, and I sat in the middle of The Roots. I was this little teeny girl, and the entire band was around me. And they're like, what do you do? And I'm like, moving to Austin, and this is exciting. Y'all are like a welcoming committee. And I sat next to Questlove, and the entire Roots on the way down. I was like, what a welcoming move.
Mm-hmm.
So that made me happy. Sorry, I love The Roots.
Yeah, you can love The Roots.
I know, I do.
You can love The Roots. Anything else on the local scene? You have some St. Ed stuff you want to chit-chat about.
I do. Mouthful, which is running from November 10th through the 20th at the Mary Moody Northern Theater. So Mouthful is a U.S. premiere. Six of the world's leading dramatists, in partnership with six world-renowned scientists, combine their talents to create an extraordinarily imaginative theatrical politically provocative response to the global food crisis.
Right, and if you do not go see it this weekend, feel free to tune in to Offstage and On the Air next week at 1 o'clock when they will be on this show.
It's exciting.
Lovely.
There you go.
I have one thing. It's only tonight, and it's a preview performance of Lost Girl at Texas Theater and Dance at UT. It's about what happened became of Wendy Darling after she followed her adventures of Peter Pan. So it's an exploration of love, loss, and identity and magic. So
you just don't get enough Peter Pan
exciting.
Never.
Stuff but no one, lately.
Well, you know what? No one ever finds out what happens to Wendy. And guess what, Lisa? I can never get enough Peter Pan. I am still that kid sleeping in my windowsill, waiting for him to pick me up and take me to Never Never Land.
I did not have to guess that. I just knew it.
I won't grow up.
All right,
we were singing that this morning, Jason.
All right, let's jump into Today in Theater History. Shall we?
Dun, dun,
Jason and I remember 1918 when Ivan Turgenev is born. It's his birthday in Russia.
Isn't it Turgenev?
I have no idea. Yes, Turgenev. You know what? I should know better than to try to say things when
Norman
you were on
was
going to
know.
Everything.
Come on.
So what's his most famous play?
A Month in the Country.
And Fortune's Fool.
When I was at UT, we did A Month in the Country, and the director had Igor Yuskevich, who was the ballet master, who had, the very famous dancer with Alicia Alonso in American Ballet Theater. And Igor taught at UT forever and ever. And we did this thing where each person came on, and he would go, A Month in the Country, the characters. Ivan Boshoff or whatever, and you come on stage and the light would hit you. But it's his voice is always in my head because of that.
Excellent. Well, his play, Fortune's Fool, made its Broadway debut in 2002, 150-year-old play.
That's crazy.
With Alan Bates.
And it was up for the Tony. and it lost to a little show called The Goat, or Who is Sylvia? Which you did at Play Theater, when it was one of my favorite shows I've ever seen in Austin, with starring one Rebecca Robinson, who we're going to speak about in just a little while.
Love that, Miss Rebecca.
Let's see. I'm gonna skip down because we're running. So the show Leave It to Me opened with music and lyrics by one Cole Porter.
I was going to say Cole, right?
Starring Gene Kelly and Sophie Tucker.
Ooh.
And somebody named Mary Martin, who's the Mary. This next song that we're going to play as Mary Martin. We were talking offline about the previous song we played. It wasn't Mary Martin. We already figured that out. The next song is going to have Mary Martin singing My Heart Belongs to Daddy, which is what's from that show.
Mm.
Let's see. Frank Wildhorn, who I know you love, in 1997 tries to follow up Jekyll and Hyde.
I love the movie. I love his musical, The Civil War. I don't love all of Frank Wildhorn. Let's just stop for a moment.
We talk about Frank Wildhorn, and he just can't get a break. That man.
No, but and I'm
and to say the, that Jekyll just, and Hyde is wildly. Successful. It wasn't wildly successful.
No. You have to be an alien to sing his scores as well.
You do. But honestly, The Civil War was probably one of the most beautiful shows with one of the most talented casts I have ever seen.
I didn't see it.
Still to this day. So I got to give him something
anyway,
for that.
Anyway, so it opened to Scarlet Pimpernel. Didn't do very well, but it ran.
Oh, I did like that. Douglas Sills was phenomenal. I did forget I liked the Scarlet Pimpernel.
And they're going to come back, and it's going to come back soon.
Oh, that. Well, they need to bring Douglas Sills back because he is so good
at
it.
We have to move because we're running late. And that's where I'm going to stop. We'll talk about local birthdays tomorrow.
Mañana.
Rebecca Robinson.
Rebecca.
Also, Alyssa Dillard, Mackenzie Cade, Etta Sanders. And
Etta Sanders. Wow, there's a lot of birthdays. It's a lot this
tomorrow.
Month.
All right, we're going to go and listen to a little bit of Mary Martin, and then we'll come back and talk and learn about Fahrenheit 451.
Yes.
While tearing off a game of golf, I may make a play.
We are back. Very good job. Golf clap for Mr. Nick Mayo. Very good job reading that.
Quiet, please. Quiet.
So we're going to jump right in and talk to Lily Wolf, who is the director, and Norman Blumenthal, who's the artistic director of Different Stages, about their upcoming production, Fahrenheit 451, which is so much better than Fahrenheit 450. Get that microphone right up to you guys. You can move it.
So what do you want us to say?
Oh,
I do have a question.
I did not ask a question. So Fahrenheit 451, everybody's had to read the novel. Very few people know that Ray Bradbury turned it into a play as well. You have it. You're doing it.
Yes.
What's it about?
It's about a society that burns books rather than reads them. So...
We're all wondering what. We're all bricking up our fireplaces right now just in case.
Right.
But then Santa can't come down the chimney.
Well, it may be worthwhile.
Uh-huh. So the first time I discovered Ray Bradbury as a dramatist, I was in a summer stock company in Raton, New Mexico, which is all the way at the top of New Mexico.
I know exactly where Raton
is. And we performed in Raton and in Trinidad, Colorado.
Right.
I drove many, many times that summer over the Raton Pass with my ears popping all the time.
I have been over that pass many times myself.
Yeah. So we did The Wonderful Ice Cream Suit by Ray Bradbury, which is a wonderful comedy about five Hispanic guys who all buy the same white suit and use the suit to take their girls out.
Okay.
So that's
not
where
at
I discovered.
The same time.
Yeah, that's where I. No, not at the same time. That's where I discovered that Ray Bradbury was a dramatist in addition to being just a playwright. So, I mean, sorry, reverse.
Got it. A novelist.
Yes.
Yeah, well, this is. But the Fahrenheit 451 is strewn with. Symbolism, and it's an allegory. What's the word I'm trying to come up with? But it's basically a metaphor for several different eras of time. But McCarthy era is generally agreed to is what it's sort of talking about. Correct?
Yeah, I suppose you could say that. I mean, I think. You know, it's what always amazes me about the writer is where do they come up with these ideas, you know, and particularly a writer of who spent his entire life writing science fiction, you know, where do they where do they come up with these ideas? Because an awful lot of the stuff that happens in Fahrenheit, the wall screens, the interactive wall screens you can talk to, you know, I mean, when the book was written, you know, we didn't have those things.
No.
You know.
There, things are said like identity computer sensor cards and things like that. It's the future, but it's in the past simultaneously.
Right, right. It's sort of amazing. Well, he wrote this in one of the things I read after the Truffaut film came out, and which expanded many of the characters, like the firefighter character is expanded in the play versus the book. Is that correct?
Yes, that's true. Montag, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and an awful lot of, I think the end of the play comes very much from the screenplay.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting. It's possible to experience this one story in several different drafts, tracing it through from the original short story, The Fireman, right? The Fireman?
Yeah.
And then
sure.
Through the, sure, yes. And then through the novel and the Truffaut film, which there are several things about the film that Bradbury is very upset about, namely the absence of the mechanical hound, which will not be absent in our production.
Yeah.
It was replaced by a lame pole that wouldn't let you slide up it.
Oh.
If you were suspicious or if you had been reading, not as cool at all. But there are some parts of the book that he had the opportunity to revisit. Like one thing he says in several interviews is that he really regrets killing off Clarice. So if you feel similarly and you miss little Clarice who starts Montag and meets him on his path towards sort of resisting this cultural phenomenon, there's a little bit more of her in the play.
I'm fascinated with all this source material and all these productions and all these iterations of this piece. How do you, from a director's standpoint, pick and choose what you specifically want to invest in as part of your, I would imagine, inspiration, part of your how? Talk a little bit about where you chose to go with your vision.
Yeah, so I would say sort of my style as a director is much more about sort of, I would describe myself as more of a sort of actor's director. And so, I think Bradbury's style of science fiction really lends itself to digging in to the human story that's sort of at the core of what's going on. I mean, there's amazing gadgets and wall screens and mechanical hounds and flamethrowers, but at the center, it's a story about a man who is dissatisfied with his life, dissatisfied with the society that he's living in, and decides to resist and make a change. And so to me, that's what's really interesting. Right. And I have such a wonderful actor in the lead, Kristen Woodrow, and he is just prime for this kind of soul-searching, who am I role.
So it sounds like you're really focusing on the human element in this
Absolutely.
Production. That's wonderful, wonderful. And as an artistic director, what draws you to this story? Is it also that human element, or where do you come at it from?
Okay, so basically, we're a classical theater. Mm-hmm. Shakespeare is done to death in Austin.
It is
over and over and over again. So when I could not cast a Shakespeare play, we ended up doing The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie, and all of a sudden it was like books on stage. So I mean, last year we did Dracula. This year we're doing that. Lord knows what. I mean, all of a sudden I thought books leaves you just an incredible array of things. You know, back in the 19th century before movies, you know, all the books were adapted to stage first because, you know, the movie wasn't going to come along and buy Gone Girl. They were going to do Gone Girl on stage. Mm-hmm. So part of it was that. And part of it was this connection from the summer stock thing of Ray Bradbury and the fact that, you know, I mean, I think he's one of the true great original American authors, you know, there's no one else like him. So, you know, why not? In addition to the fact that at times I wonder whether we're living in a very anti-intellectual, anti-reading, anti-knowledge, anti-whatever
Absolutely.
Society.
Independent thinking.
Yes.
I think we...
Not me. I have my National Park passport stamp book, and I read books all the time.
Okay, well,
there
go
you
ahead.
Go. So we are almost out of time. Who else is... Give us some more of your cast members. Who else is in the show?
Sure. So we have Gary Peters, who is playing the role of Faber. We have Rick Smith playing Beatty. You gotta see him. We have a really lovely... ensemble of Evan McQuaid and Cassie Revelis, who you have to see this duo, my friends. They're playing several different characters, but there's something sort of essential about the interactions with each other that's carried through them all. We have Martina Olhauser, who is playing Mildred, just a really wonderful Catherine Center.
Yeah, Mildred is Montag's drugged out wife. I mean, you know, she
story kind of my life.
Yeah, she lives on her pills, so and her wall screen.
So y'all open this weekend, yes?
We open
yes.
Friday.
You open Friday, playing through when?
December 3rd.
And you are at the Vortex.
Yes.
Awesome.
And if you go to the Vortex website, there's a special. Check it out.
Okay. So there's some information at vortexrep.org. Some special information you might get there if you look at it.
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you guys for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Hopefully y'all can join us back amongst the puddles and the dumpsters backstage. We would love that. Anyway, that was Lily Wolf and Norman Blumensaat of Different Stages production of Fahrenheit 451. Plays November 11th through December 3rd at the Vortex. For more information, vortexrep.org or main.org/diffstages. And of course, this is a Broadway show.
Funny you chose that. I put Billy Joel on today to make me feel better this morning. That's what I was jamming out in my house to is Billy Joel.
That's a good person to jam out to.
Piano Man. Come on.
Thank you, guys. You're going to be without me next week.
We will miss you.
We will miss you.
You will have much fun. There will be revelry. If you are listening to the us over the airwaves, stand by for Austin Monitor News. They're next. I'm sure they have lots to talk about with the election. If you're listening on the podcast, and you should be listening on the podcast.
Hello.
You get the podcast by subscribing to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or iHeartRadio, and there are other ways.
Best way, you can just go to offstageonair.com and enter your little email in the right-hand little box, and we just appear each week.
Yeah, into your mailbox, and so we would love to have you. Stick around again for Backstage at Offstage and or Austin Monitor News, depending on how you get our information, and we will leave you with a little bit of My Shot from the Hamilton mixtape, and enjoy the roots. This is for Nicole.
Rise up. If you're living on your knees, you rise up. Tell your brother that he's got to rise up. Tell your sister that she's got to rise up. When a folks like me,
well, the curtain has just come down on Why Us, the dirgy musical, the hapless story of a nation seeking a world where people are treated fairly and as human beings and are thwarted at every stop or at least every 8 years. So you can tell where my mind is. So backstage, join us as everybody. Lily Wolf could not stay, but we do have Jason Williams. Hi, Jason.
Good to be here.
Norman Blumensaat.
I'm here, coughing, and, but I'm here.
Well, you sound healthy. You're not healthy. I have not heard a cough.
You didn't hear me cough.
I did not hear you cough.
No, I didn't hear. I'm
hacking.
And of course, we have Nick and Nick. Nick Squared.
Nick Squared.
So, you know, we have to, you know, I said during the broadcast that we're not going to talk politics, but I think we have to here. We're backstage and we're just talking amongst ourselves.
You can say whatever the hell you want here. So
and,
go ahead.
You know, well, we, most of us here in Austin, tend to go for on the liberal side of things. I'm going to guess that Austin, well, I don't have to guess, Austin went for Hillary in this election. And many of us are not too happy that Trump.
Did you actually see, I found interesting, our state was very neck and neck for a long time. It wasn't as clear cut as it had been.
It had to move west. As it moved west,
it was interesting and exciting to see that happening where people weren't just flipping around when they were doing their broadcast. Like, they stayed on Texas and really focused on numbers and percentages and like, whoa.
Yep.
And I found that interesting.
Okay, but didn't they call it like 45 minutes after the polls closed?
No. Texas didn't get called until
later. No, it was late. It was one of the later ones.
But I do sort of want to keep this in the theater mode a little bit, or in the arts mode, and talk about how politics affects us as artists and as theater artists. I mean, we have a long history of theater talking about social justice issues, political issues, and shining a light on that stuff. Where do you guys sit on all of that?
You know, one thing I've noticed is that we live in such a rude society, and there's so much screaming and shouting that people listen to on their devices every day. I'm not going to do it this time, but when we performed in Galveston last summer and it was, you know, the campaign was tightening up, I came out and said, you know, there's something in this show, my show, Wolverine walks into a bar to offend everybody, so why don't you boo now? And just got everybody to boo. And it was, you know, they worked it out. And then there was what, you know, the thing that gets me is you can mention one word and people will react. They will boo naturally. And I'll throw them out. And I did.
Well, mm-hmm. The thing.
Like that, throw them out of the theater?
Yep.
Okay.
The thing that's disheartening is you feel like all civility has left our society.
Yeah.
We can't have a civil disagreement. I can't say.
No one knows how to agree to disagree anymore. Yeah. And it makes me so angry. I think I thank you a lot when I say, I love that you can agree to disagree with me. I love that. Because, hello. There's not, I feel like no one knows how to do that anymore. Yeah, it drives me crazy.
We can't say, you hate red, but I'll like you anyways.
Right.
Yeah.
That's really disheartening. That whole thing of like has completely just seems to have, you know, and everything.
But do you think that has anything to do with the disintegration of our ability to speak to each other, actually use our mouths?
Oh, formulate
a thought
and not have it go through the computer or the cell phone. Yes.
That's
where we actually have to do what
like
we're doing now.
Voice.
Sit down in the same room, in the same space and speak to each other.
Yes.
But I don't think that it's all that new. I mean, discourse has been bad in every era. It's taken on different forms, and we of course have our devices and social media. But there was NPR did a thing where they made negative campaign ads based on the words of Jefferson and Burr, and it's they were very derisive and nasty back then.
But they used their words,
yes,
right?
Yes, they were.
They used their words.
Hello, you know, like, I mean, the perfect example, you use Hamilton and Aaron Burr. I mean, they argued with each other. They did a duel. Hamilton wrote him back like a 7-page letter saying, that's right, buddy, and stuck it to him. I mean, they were mean to each other.
But I'm not talking about politics. I'm talking about everyday life of like, you know, can you go
that
to the theater and just be civil, you know, to the person sitting next to you or the performer performing. I mean, that kind of thing. Or can you go to the grocery store and be civil to whoever, you know?
Well, but I try to through my everyday life, through my art, through everything, is to try to model behavior that I would like to see in others. And I think it's important for us as artists and as leaders to do that. And turn the other cheek. I think it's important.
I think it is. But I frankly am shocked by our country right now. And I'm embarrassed. I don't mind telling you. I'm embarrassed. I'm terribly embarrassed. And, you know, we all grew up wherever we grew up. But, you know, my family, my mother was a school teacher. My father was a farmer. You know, we attended church. We didn't have money, but we were fine. They were good people. But my family taught me how to recognize trash. And trash has nothing to do with how you live or how you dress or any of that. There is a certain behavior that is just trash behavior, and it's become marketable.
Yep.
In this country. Yes. It has been marketed. Yes. And now someone who made history marketing it is going to be running the country.
Well, for me, I know people will be object to this, but I just thought we've put an amateur in the White House. We've put a total amateur in dealing with all of the issues that arise as president.
Amateur night
in
Queens.
I agree. Yes. I'll tell you what, I have to bring this back to theater, but that's a really good point. Yes. And, you know, we always say we don't want a politician, but would you ask, you know, go to the street and grab somebody out there and have them direct the next Broadway play?
No.
That you've sunk $1 million into?
No.
So no, you wouldn't. So that's a great point. And I think
yeah,
we do want.
Yeah, it's not an understudy. It's like the unknown.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, and totally scary. What will this person do? And will this person ever grasp?
Could not agree more. Yeah. I was. I just got back from New York and joined my off-Broadway community for a gathering and a meeting for the Fair Wage on Stage movement,
which we forgot to mention in the broadcast. They extended the deadline, which is a good sign.
That we
to the 20th,
it was,
right?
We were off Broadway was supposed to strike on Monday.
Right.
They extended it due to positive negotiation.
Yes, it means they're using their words.
That's the reason I bring this up, is because as artists, I could not have been prouder to stand with 150 to 200 of my off-Broadway actor friends and listen to the way they spoke about the disagreements. And because of positive negotiations, both sides, right or wrong,
there's always a common ground. I think we forget that. No matter how opposite we are, some, even if it's the thinnest of thinnest strands, there is somewhere that there is a common ground between two opposing
even
sides.
Even if there's not a common ground per se, but that, there needs to be understanding. So if you are far apart on something, and there are times where there simply is no common ground, but if I understand you and you understand me, we can find somewhere we both have to move a little and create that common ground. Mm-hmm.
Well, the other thing that my other hobby horse at the moment is, has everyone in this room has seen the movie Lincoln, right?
Of course.
Yeah. Okay, well, what I love about Lincoln...
I actually haven't watched the whole thing from end, sorry.
Okay, but what I love about Lincoln is all the wheeling and dealing that Lincoln does, and it always involves money.
Yes.
And when in our desire to be ideologically pure, monetarily pure, we got rid of earmarks, there's no reason for me to negotiate with you. And I think, I don't know, I think the system works for money, for me.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it really does. I mean, you have to have some self-interest. Otherwise, why?
Yeah, it's interesting. So do you think that over the next 4 years, so as you, Norman, look at your season in the next 4 years.
He's laughing already at you.
But do you think that you might take the opportunity to make some statements regarding this, by using classic?
Okay. So a friend of mine sent me this because they know I've been on this tear about books, that the Berkeley Rep has done this version of Sinclair Lewis's, I think it's called It Could Happen Here, which is about a demagogue taking over America. And that it's been this major thing because the audiences have come in and it's like, oh my God, this is exactly what's happening in the country. So I thought, okay, well, there's something to look at. You know, but then I also think there's other things, you know, maybe at the moment we need what Jason will be giving people at the State Theater. Maybe we need just lots of laughter and comedy.
I mean, there's a place
as a healing.
Well, and there's a way to mix it. Lauren has a monologue in the show where she's talking about how she's broken up with her girlfriend Sheila. There's Sheila and Sheila. There's,
right.
You know,
there's always a lesbian. Always a Sheila.
There's always a lesbian named Sheila. And so she's broken up with Sheila after all these years. And she's talking about, you know, her family was nice to me every Christmas, but they're from Vermont, so you don't know if they mean it. But she said, you know, and now I'm back home. My family, my aunts and cousins want me to come spend Christmas with them, but there's one cousin, and I know she'll be nice to me, and I know she'll be kind to me, but I know she doesn't get me, and this day is the only day that she gets. This is the most important day of the year to her, and I don't want to ruin that for her. In that, you know, and it's not that I'm saying she's right. I'm saying I know how she is. Mm-hmm. This woman has spent her life alone. And what she gets is one day every year at Christmas. And if I come, she'll be nice to me. But it's going to be a real strain on her Christmas. And I'm not going to do that to her.
And Jason, as a creator, you are someone who I look at as such an example who exists in that threshold, that liminal place between something that makes you laugh and something that makes you really think about yourself as a human. And you exist in that threshold. And
you can't keep humor out.
No, you can
just make it into.
And I think that's what know. That's what why it's so beautiful, painful,
yeah.
Painful and and you painful and comedic.
That's. I kept up with everything last night because I refused to. I finally TV turned it off. So then I kept going to the cell phone and putting on Facebook and seeing all that. Oh my God, you know, it's the end of the world, whatever. And I felt like doing a post and going, okay, but this is going to give. Oh my God, who has been doing Trump on Saturday Night Live?
Oh,
Alec Baldwin.
I went to the same place.
And
he's got 4 years of work.
Laura Benedetti, the careers. Yes, who's been doing Melania. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you haven't seen her Melania, this is like, I thought, this is going to give them a job for the next.
She's also 7 months pregnant. Like, doing seven,
yeah. Tracy Ullman's been doing Melania.
Unfortunate thing,
too.
She last night she did a thing on Colbert. Did you see it?
I did.
But clearly it was written when they assumed that Trump was going to lose. But at the time that they played it last night, it was clear it was going the other way around.
It was a hard one.
And they had to
navigate it.
Jigger the script because she didn't change the script per se. Yeah. But they led up to it differently. Well, we're out of time here backstage. We sort of went into a political bend, but I think that...
I think that's healthy.
I think it's healthy, mm-hmm. and I think it's important for... us as artists and theater people to keep hope alive, and use our words, as Nick Mayo says.
Take care of each other.
Yeah.
Let's take care of each other.
You know, it's Zach's doing the Great Society in January, so it'll be interesting, really. Now, from we were talking about looking at the play from one way versus the other on how the election turns out. So I think it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Right.
As a patron.
Is the Great Society about all of the civil rights legislation?
And more. It's the sequel to All the Way.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But is it the portion of LBJ's life?
Yes. It's about civil rights. It covers Vietnam wars. There's a lot of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which I think we're seeing the effect of now. Mm. Because I think there was large portions of the country that did not like that legislation. So.
Right. Mm. Right. Well, thank you guys for braving the dumpsters and talking politics here at Backstage and Offstage.
Well, you know, I can't see a more fitting place.
Bye, you guys.
Bye.
Here we stand with our world upside down. Not a word, not a sigh, not a sound. It's a very strange night. All the plans that we thought we'd made, all the dreams now seem to fade. They're tumbling down, down to the ground. I hear you calling out to me. I hear the wind whisper in the trees. It's gonna be all right.